Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Nitzavim. This week also marks 1 week from Rosh Hashanah and then Yom Kippur closely following, and Pardes has released the Pardes Companion to Yom Kippur. It's a collection of articles by Pardes faculty members to help prepare and guide you through the highlights of the Yom Kippur rituals and prayer services. The Pardes Companion to Yom Kippur is available for download right now from elmad.pardes.org. That's elmad.pardes.org. So download it now, and you can use it throughout the Chagim. This week, Nitzavim with Rabbi Howard Marcos. Rabbi Marcos is a member of the Pardes faculty. And now, Rabbi Howard Marcos.
Thank you, Larry. You stand this day, all of you, before the Lord your God, to enter into the covenant of the Lord your God, which the Lord your God is concluding with you this day. Atem nitzavim hayom kulchem, lifnei Adonai Eloheichem, leovrecha bivrit Adonai Elohecha uv'alato, asher Adonai Elohecha koret imcha hayom. This majestic proclamation shared by Moses with the children of Israel brings every Jew in every generation, even to this day, into the Brit, the covenant with God. In a nutshell, the deal that was struck between God and the Jewish people is that we will observe his commandments, and he will keep us alive and well. I must tell you, 3,000 years later, we are still struggling to fulfill the mitzvot, and at the same time can be incredibly humbled by the fact that the Jewish people continues to exist. We are indeed alive and well in so many ways. Jews continue to celebrate the same holidays that were the focus of the community over 2 millennia ago. We are still aware of, and many continue to practice, the laws and traditions of our ancestors, including how we marry, divorce, eat, study, and even speak to one another with respect and honor. I have always marveled at how the Jews, with the odds of survival over the years being so low, have not only managed to remain on this earth, but we have flourished and have somehow kept a collective smile on our face. Did you know that for the third consecutive year, Israel was rated the 11th happiest country in the world? Factors such as per capita gross domestic product, healthy years of expectancy, life expectancy, a feeling of freedom from corruption in government and business, and what I consider the most important factor in creating happiness in Israel, knowing that there is someone to count on in times of trouble, all contribute to the ratings, about which I think we in Israel can feel pretty good. Of course, not everyone in the country is happy, and not all of the factors that were used to determine who is happy and one which has plenty of warts, our overall score is something we can be very proud of. It is a part, I believe, of the promise of a meaningful life given to the children of Israel thousands of years ago. Tell me, do you consider yourself a part of this national covenant that was declared in the land of Moab? Well, in anticipation of the possibility that some of us might say, we weren't there, and so therefore we are neither bound nor can we benefit by this contract, Moses continues his proclamation addressing precisely this point. In Deuteronomy, Devarim, chapter 29, verse 13, we are informed, V'lo itchem levadchem anochi koret et habrit hazot v'et ha'ala hazot, ki et asher yeshno po imanu hayom, lifnei Adonai Eloheinu, Vet asher einenu po imanu hayom. I make this covenant with its sanctions, not with you alone, but both with those who are standing here with us this day before the Lord our God, and with those who are not with us here this day. If ever there was a statement which brings inclusion to the highest level, it is this beginning statement in Parshat Nitzavim. Moses is quite clear in communicating the idea that every Jew, I mean everyone, is entering into this covenant with God. And in a poetic elaboration of who that everybody is, the list of participants is presented. Rashechem, Shiftechem, Ziknechem, Veshotrechem, Kol Ish Yisrael. First of all, your tribal heads, your elders, and your officials, all the men of Israel. Tapchem, Neshechem, Vegircha, Asher Bekerev Machanecha. Your children, your wives, even the stranger within your camp. Well, the list is fine so far. The leadership, the men, women, and children, as well as the non-Israelites who have joined their compatriots on this 40-year journey through the wilderness, are all included in the list of who is standing there to make the covenant with God. Those non-Israelites having stuck around clearly indicates their willingness also to share in the more challenging times. And as a result, they may join in this collective agreement with God to reap rewards and endure sanctions as they make their way to the promised land. But then, the list adds something very interesting. We read in the end of verse 10, Mechotev etzecha ad shoev meimecha, from woodchopper to water drawer. There are a couple of questions that I have regarding these people who are listed in the Nitzavim, those standing before the Lord God to sign on to this everlasting contract and covenant. First of all, during 40 years of trekking in a wilderness that was mostly desert, how many woodchoppers might there have been in the Israelite camp? And let's say, for argument's sake, that there were a few. Might they not have been considered a rather highly respected group of people? After all, if wood was needed, for example, to keep a fire going in the Mishkan, the sanctuary where sacrifices were brought, would it not be proper to suggest that the few individuals who could find the trees and chop them down and make firewood would be appreciated and respected in the camp? And in the same vein, would it not be reasonable to say that those drawing water in this wasteland that served as the background for 40 years of wandering were also a part of an elite group of people who deserve the community's respect? And yet, most of the commentaries addressing the woodchopper and water drawer are quite adamant in describing these people as the lowest on the hierarchy, contrasting quite starkly with the Zekenim, Rashi Shivatim, and Shotrim, the tribe leaders, the elders, and the law enforcers introduced in the beginning of the verse. So, for example, the 12th century French commentator Joseph ben Isaac Bechor Shor states quite succinctly, Mechotev etzecha ha'avadim, the woodchoppers are the male slaves, ad shoev mimecha ha'shvachot, and the water drawers are the female slaves. In this interpretation, we might understand an encouraging message emanating from Moshe's speech, namely, no matter what your status in the community, whether you are a head of a major firm or the one who brings coffee to the executives, you are most certainly a part of this covenant. Rashi, on the other hand, takes into account the tale of the Gibeonites found in the book of Joshua, the only other place in the Hebrew Bible in which this combination of woodchopper and water drawer are mentioned. He offers a different explanation based on an early midrash. Rashi says that the mention of these two groups of people comes to teach us that there were Canaanites who came to Moses and converted to become members of the Israelite people, just like the Gibeonites who were given the same tasks after they joined the ranks of the Israelites in Joshua's time, albeit through cunning and deceit. In chapter 9 of the book of Joshua, we are told that our hero of the same name was enjoying great success in the conquering of the land of Canaan, including cities such as Jericho and Ai. Word spread of the Israelites' prowess, and the Gibeonites, who were also in a position of being overrun by the Israelites and most likely killed, devised a plan. They disguised themselves in threadbare clothing and worn-out, patched sandals, and took with them dry and crumbly provisions. They came before Joshua in the Israelite camp and said, "We come from a distant land. We propose that you make a pact with us." The Israelites responded with suspicion, "Perhaps you live among us. How then can we make a pact with you?" You have to understand that if these men were indeed representing a local nation like the Hivites, which the men of Gibeon actually were, then in accordance with God's command in Devarim, Deuteronomy chapter 7, when the Lord your God brings you to the land that you are about to enter and possess, and he dislodges many nations before you, including the Hivites, and the Lord your God delivers them to you, and you defeat them, Hacharem tacharem otam, lo tichrot lahem brit, velo tichonem. You must doom them to destruction, grant them no terms, and show them no mercy. The story in the book of Joshua continues. They said to Joshua, "We will be your subjects." But Joshua asked them, "Who are you, and where do you come from?" To which they replied, "Your servants have come from a very distant country, because of the fame of the Lord your God. For we heard the report of him, of all that he did in Egypt, and all that he did to the two Amorite kings on the other side of the Jordan. So our elders and all the inhabitants of our country instructed us as follows: take along provisions for a trip and go to them and say, 'We will be your subjects. Come, make a pact with us.'" The men took their word because of the way their provisions and their clothing looked and didn't bother inquiring of the Lord. Joshua established friendship with them. He made a pact with them to spare their lives, and the chieftains of the community gave them their oath. When it was discovered 3 days later that the Israelites had been tricked by these inhabitants of Gibeon, the people wanted to kill them all, but the Israelite leaders would not allow any harm to come to them, as they had sworn not to attack them. However, since they established the covenant deceitfully, the elders of the Israelites decided that they would be cursed. We read in the text, Joshua 9:23, "V'ata arurim atem, v'lo yikaret mikem eved v'chotvei etzim v'sho'avei maim levet Elohai. Therefore, be accursed. Never shall your descendants cease to be slaves, hewers of wood and drawers of water, for the house of my God." As a result of this section of our Tanakh making use of the terms woodchoppers and drawers of water, Rashi explains that this is why in the passage in the book of Joshua we are told, "Vayasu gam hema be'orma," the Gibeonites also acted deceitfully. Also, Rashi says that the others who joined the Israelites in this manner were the Canaanites, who must have deceitfully joined the wandering community in the wilderness, who were also relegated to the tasks of wood chopping and water drawing. As Rashi comments, "Unatanam Moshe chotvei etzim v'shoavei maim," and Moses assigned them these jobs in his term as leader. I must admit to you, I'm still not 100% satisfied with these explanations. Of all tasks, why in the world would the Torah choose these two, the wood chopper and the water drawer? Well, perhaps an answer might come from the contemporary world of the Bible. As it happens, there is a story that was uncovered in the documents discovered in the ancient city of Ugarit, located on the northwestern coast of modern-day Syria. The place is known as Ras Shamra, and one of the stories, known to have been a part of the lore of Ugarit, dating to at least the 14th century before the Common Era, was found on stone tablets just about 100 years ago in 1929. It is the tale of King Kirta, a man who suffered the loss of his whole family, his dynasty threatened with extinction. The disaster is described in the text step by step, in a fashion very similar to the fateful series of announcements made to Job in the biblical story, that his wife left him and his home and family had been destroyed. Kirta is devastated, and the story continues with him seeking guidance from the divine in a dream. The god El, indeed, comes to Kirta in his dream and instructs him to gather his entire army and go bring back a princess from the neighboring kingdom with whom he might begin a new family. Kirta does as he has been instructed in the dream and heads off to find his princess bride. In the poetry that is presented in the Ugaritic language, we have El, the god, telling Kirta to go into the neighboring town and devastate it. I quote, "Attack its outlying towns, assault the surrounding villages," end quote. Kirta continues to hear El speak to him in his dream. Once again, "Sweep from the fields the men chopping wood, from the threshing floors the women picking straw. Sweep from the well the women drawing water, from the spring the women filling jars." From this very ancient poem, we can understand that the images of the woodcutter and the water drawer are used to describe in a creative way the whole population of a town or village. There is no mention of people who are of a higher status. It is just the image of certain common professions that is presented in the epic of King Kirta to refer to the general population. So what should we do with this information? How does it help us understand our Torah portion in Sefer Devarim in Parshat Nitzavim? I would like to suggest that the fact that this description is found in both the Ugaritic literature of the 15th century before the Common Era and in the Book of Devarim in the Hebrew Bible, which some choose to date around the 12th century BCE, there was very likely a common phrase in the ancient Near East used to describe every single human being. That phrase, from the woodchopper to the water drawer. It is not prejudging the economic status of these professions, nor is it denigrating them, making them equal to slaves, as the medieval commentators tried to do. It is an ancient Near Eastern expression that is found in multiple languages, which signifies an entire population. When Moses declares to the people in the wilderness, just as they are about to enter the land of Canaan, that they are all standing before God, he wishes to convey to them that all of them, every single one of them, is invited to benefit from the covenant being taken on. Everyone, regardless of status, is equal in the eyes of the Lord, who desires that they all make their new home blessed and secure. Similarly, it seems to me that we today could use a dose of similar declaration, that in God's eyes, we all have the same access to the divine. We all have the opportunity to enjoy the rewards that come with being a part of the Jewish people. And we also are obliged to share equally in the burdens and responsibilities that come with being Jewish. The message is that we are not to say, "I'm financially challenged, so I will not be part of the tzedakah giving community." We are not to say, "My house is too small, so I am not prepared to practice the mitzvah of hachnasat orchim, hospitality. Nor are we to distance ourselves completely from the perpetrators of crimes in this world who happen to be Jewish. On the other hand, when a Jewish athlete fares well in the Olympics, for example, I think it's perfectly acceptable for us to proudly share in the victory. When a Jew wins a Nobel Prize, we can feel as if somehow we contributed to this achievement. And when a Jew discovers a cure for a terrible disease, we may even allow ourselves to say that we played a part in the discovery. From the woodchopper to the water drawer, there is a place in our community for everyone, as we are all equal in the proverbial eyes of God.
Thank you, Rabbi Marcos. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.